in this week's New Yorker magazine, a profile of a house of cards that has collapsed. Reporter Jane Mayer dug deep into the background of Iraqi leader Ahmed Chalabi, a man with high connections who, it seems, has manipulated not only some of the highest-ranking Republicans in our government, but also many in the media, including Judith Miller of the New York Times. Joining us now from her home in Chevy Chase, Maryland, is Jane Mayer, a reporter for the New Yorker magazine, the author of a profile of Ahmed Chalabi entitled The Manipulator. It's published in the June 7th issue of the magazine. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thanks so much for having me.
There is news today about Ahmed Chalabi, or at least details of a charge that's been emerging over the past week or so. This is the allegation that Ahmed Chalabi disclosed to an Iranian official that the U.S. had broken a secret communications code of Iran's covert intelligence service. Of course, Chalabi and the Iranians both deny that.
Yeah, we actually had some details of this in the piece, I'm glad to say, though it does seem to be there's sort of more and more flesh being added to the bones recently, and the New York Times advanced it a little bit further today. It's a bizarre charge, really. Chalabi, of course, has been the staunchest U.S. ally among the Iraqi exile community for years now. I mean, the U.S. has poured $100 million into backing him over the last 10 or 15 years, and suddenly has turned around and accused him of espionage, basically.
Mm-hmm.
He's accused of specifically having told the Iranians that the U.S. knew how to eavesdrop on them and had deciphered their encrypted code that they use for intelligence, and the U.S. supposedly figured this out by eavesdropping yet again and picking up a message from the Iranian intelligence chief in Baghdad, sending a message back to Tehran saying the U.S. knows how to listen in on us because Chalabi told me so. It's a weird story because. And Chalabi's people have sort of scoffed at it, saying, you know, if the Iranians knew that we knew how to listen on them, why would they ever send a message like that, knowing that we would pick it up immediately? So anyway, it's being investigated by the FBI, and also being investigated are several American officials who are suspected of possibly having told Chalabi about our ability to eavesdrop on the Iranians.
We mentioned that Ahmed Chalabi denied it. Here he is speaking on May 23rd with Chris Wallace on Fox News Sunday.
I have never passed any classified information to Iran have done anything, participated in any scheme of Iranian intelligence against the United States. This charge is false. I have never seen a U.S. classified document, and I have never seen had a U.S. classified briefing.
Jane, we just have a few seconds in this segment, much more after the break, but this was a man, you could say a lot of things about him, but wanted to overthrow the Saddam Hussein regime and describes himself as an Iraqi patriot. What would he be giving codes to the Iranians for?
Well, he's also a secular Shiite who's had long family ties to Iran, and he has close ties himself to the so-called reform wing of the Iranian government.
Well, when we come back from a short break, we'll continue this discussion with the New Yorker's Jane Mayer. Her profile of Ahmed Chalabi is in the June 7th issue of the New Yorker magazine. If you'd like to join our conversation, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tomorrow on the program, bringing entertainment to the faithful and faith to entertainment, the business, the art, and the success of Christian music. That's tomorrow on Talk of the Nation. Today we're talking about Iraqi leader Ahmed Chalabi and his tumultuous relationship with the United States government. Joining our guest is Jane Mayer. She wrote an article in this week's New Yorker magazine about Chalabi entitled The Manipulator. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And Jane, give us a little more background on Ahmed Chalabi, born in Iraq to a very powerful family.
He was the son of the largest landholder in Iraq. At least that's what he's told people, and one of the richest people in Iraq. So he And his family fled when in 1958, when the Ba'athist and communist revolution came through Iraq and overthrew the monarchy and the old aristocracy, which his family was part of. But, you know, the thing that I would like to stress, and when you ask the questions about, you know, Chalabi and espionage, is that there have been questions about Chalabi's character going back years and years, and if the U.S. now is surprised or beginning to have concerns, they're slow to come to this question of who is Ahmed Chalabi, because, in fact, there's been a long track record. He is somebody who was convicted of a spectacular bank fraud case in Jordan, where he founded and set up a what became the third largest bank in the country of Jordan, and the thing collapsed in just a welter of criminal allegations that he had extended loans to himself and to his family and friends and God knows what else. I mean, it was just hundreds of millions of dollars disappeared. And it was at about that point, right around 1990, after he was convicted in absentia, he fled rather than standing trial there, that he moved to London and started working really for the CIA, and we started supporting him, we the U.S., that is, and using him to form an opposition movement against Saddam Hussein. And he's been working tirelessly and relentlessly and very resourcefully, I'd have to say, ever since, to wage a campaign to get the U.S. into a war in some way to back him in a military enterprise of some sort or another to overthrow Saddam Hussein. And many people who've known him for years look at him at this point and say, well, he succeeded in what he wanted, which was to knock off Saddam Hussein and bring regime change. So
The CIA, though, after this, you detail this relationship with the Central Intelligence Agency through, I guess, a subcontracting company based in London. It was offshored, I guess, is one way to look at it, through which he lobbied for change. But eventually the CIA came to sour on Ahmed Chalabi.
Well, they did. I mean, and the other thing about Chalabi, if you go through his whole life, and I must have interviewed, I don't know, 40 people to do this piece who've known him. I mean, dozens and dozens. Many of his relationships come to bad ends along the way. So this latest chapter is just one more example of it. But yes, the CIA soured on him, and he soured on them. In 1995 and 1996, he used U.S. government funds to stage a kind of a quixotic coup attempt against Saddam Hussein, and the CIA had warned him that it had been infiltrated and not to try it, but he went ahead anyway, and unsurprisingly, it ended badly for him. And then soon after, Saddam Hussein came in and basically just slaughtered a lot of Chalabi's people. Chalabi was in London at the time, but the carnage was really awful, and Chalabi blamed the CIA, and the CIA blamed him. And since then, there's been very little trust on either side. And as you may have noticed in the press, Chalabi has blamed all of his current problems on the CIA, saying that he's done nothing wrong, but they are framing him. It's much like it actually when his bank went belly up, he said it wasn't that he had done anything wrong. It was that Saddam Hussein had framed him there using the Jordanians to carry out Saddam Hussein's orders. So he's not somebody who fesses up very easily if he's made a mistake.
Our number, if you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Let's take a call from Charles in Memphis, Tennessee.
Hi, guys. Isn't anyone with ties to the U.S. prior to the occupation suspect to Iraqis and to the Arab world in general?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Isn't anybody who had ties to the United States before the war suspect now in the eyes of Iraqis in Iraq?
Well, yes. I mean, and in some ways, I mean, actually, what I mean, Ahmed Chalabi is a tremendous survivor. I have to say, I came away from spending several months reporting on him and actually interviewed him, thinking he's tremendously shrewd and tremendously manipulative, and which is why we call him the manipulator. But at any rate, he has said to people that the U.S. turning on him now is a gift, and if anything, it increases his credibility in the eyes of his countrymen back in Iraq. He really was not terribly well known personally in Iraq because he hasn't been there since 1958. So he left the country when he was 13, and he has to kind of prove himself in the eyes of Iraqis. And what he's argued is that nothing really would be better for that than having America turn on him now.
Charles, I'm sorry, you were trying to get in?
Oh, I'm sorry. I said, what are his poll numbers?
His poll numbers are just pitiful. They are worse than Saddam Hussein's back in Iraq, which is remarkable.
Thank you.
Thanks, Charles. And if Ahmed Chalabi is distancing himself from his former friends in Washington, they appear to be doing much the same. Yesterday, during a news conference at the White House Rose Garden, President Bush was asked a question about Mr. Chalabi's role in the administration. This is a part of the president's answer.
My meetings with him were very brief. I mean, I think I met with him at the State of the Union and just kind of working through the rope line, and he might have come with a group of leaders, but I haven't had any extensive conversations with him.
The president makes it sound as if he went through the White House on a public tour.
Ahmed, who has served the kind of the pose at this point. I don't know that President Bush and Ahmed Chalabi were terribly close. According to Chalabi, they have met four times, so that's twice as often as the president seems to remember, but it's still not an awful lot. But the question of, how much time they personally spent together doesn't really get at the heart of the matter, which is that that others in the administration, particularly the Vice President Cheney, and many of the top civilians at the Pentagon, Paul Wolfowitz and Douglas Feith and a handful of others, were very close with Chalabi, and Chalabi had a direct link into them, so that the intelligence that he was digging up on weapons of mass destruction and other issues went directly to these people, these top people in the administration, unfiltered by the CIA, which was less credulous about a lot of it. So I think in many ways his influence was far greater than what President Bush seemed to indicate yesterday.
Let's get a call in. This is Joel, who's with us from Cary, North Carolina.
Well, the thing is that it seems to be he's the poster child for the Bush administration's handling of things. They have an agenda. They had one from the outset about going into Iraq, and he answered all the questions they wanted. He put forward the ideas that they wanted to hear, and they didn't give any sort of put any microscope on him and find out what was behind what his agenda was.
I think in many ways that's right. In some ways I look at him as an enabler. There were people in the administration who wanted to wage this war for a variety of reasons. And what Chalabi did was he provided them with the cause for war.
Or legitimacy, I guess, would be the way to put it.
Well, specifically what he realized, and his people were talking to me, and they speak throughout this piece, they spoke on the record, was that the Bush administration, in order to sell the war to the American public, realized that it would need to make the public feel that it had that it was threatened by Iraq. They needed to really get across the notion that there might be weapons of mass destruction and possibly even a nuclear weapon that could be in the hands of a madman like Saddam Hussein, so that this was really something that we absolutely had to do for our own safety. And what Chalabi did it was to bring forth a string of defectors, Iraqi defectors, who said they had firsthand knowledge of these things. They said that they were various scientists and engineers who said that they had worked in these weapons programs and vouched for the fact that they were near completion or still in existence and were a threat to the U.S. And it created a tremendous amount of fear.
Joel, thanks for the call.
Sure.
We're speaking with Jane Mayer. Her article in this week's issue of The New Yorker magazine is "The Manipulator Ahmed Chalabi Pushed a Tainted Case for War. Can He Survive the Occupation?" That's the subtitle. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Jane Mayer, one of the things you write about is Ahmed Chalabi's knowledge of and ability to manipulate the political process in the United States to gain his ends. And that, of course, was the overthrow of Saddam Hussein. You say he prided himself on his understanding of the U.S. and its history.
Well, I mean, I think he's terrifically bright. People may be underestimating him if they don't acknowledge that. He went to the University of Chicago and MIT and got a PhD in mathematics, in knot theory, actually. And while he was in this country, he studied a lot of American history. And he told me specifically he was very impressed by the lessons he learned about how FDR had moved America into World War II at a time when many people were reluctant to get into that war. He studied the Lend-Lease program, which most people will remember was a program that committed the U.S. to becoming partisans in that war. And he sculpted the Iraq Liberation Act, which was passed by Congress in 1998, very much along the same lines, in order to commit the U.S. to a goal of overthrowing Saddam Hussein. He also made a list of what he thought were about 150 people who were most influential on shaping U.S. policy towards Iraq, and he set out to meet them all, and he did personally. He was on first-name basis with dozens of congressmen and senators, and he also got to know a lot of the current administration were in exile during the Clinton years, and he got to know a lot of them at various think tanks around Washington so that they really became pretty good friends. He was pretty upfront about it. In some ways, he was not being sneaky about this. His goal was to overthrow Saddam Hussein, and he crafted a message and he crafted a campaign, and he went about trying to get that done.
Let's get another caller in. Jim from Indianapolis.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
Yes, sir. I appreciate the great program that you have and on a daily basis.
Thank you.
My question here is for the lady that you have there now is, if Ahmed Chalabi had been convicted of bank fraud in Jordan and was also a fugitive from the law, why on earth did Britain and the U.S. work so closely with this man and never bothered to respect the law by turning him over to Jordan?
Well, this is a good question. Chalabi was convicted by a military court, and because it was a military court, I guess from what I have understood, the other countries were not bound to extradite him as they would if it had been a regular criminal court. So they weren't they were not required to send him back to serve time. At the same time, you would think it would raise questions about his character. One of the things that is remarkable about Chalabi is he never says uncle. He doesn't admit in fact, he denies strenuously that he did anything wrong with his bank in Jordan, and he is just a wonderfully convincing speaker. He's just very smooth, and maybe he convinced them.
We just have a few seconds left. He always said he had no personal ambitions beyond the overthrow of Saddam Hussein and the installment of a democratic regime. Apparently he's changing his tune a little bit.
Well, I asked him if he thought maybe he'd run for office, and I said, he said, oh, no, I'm not a candidate for anything. I said, never. He said, oh, well, never is a very long time. So maybe he will. I think that the possibility is that he will try to obstruct whatever interim government there is and possibly run in any future election, or else get somebody who is a crony to run for him.
May have to do something about those poll numbers, though. Jane Mayer, thank you very much.
Thanks so much. Glad to be here.
Jane Mayer, a reporter for The New Yorker magazine, the author of a profile on Ahmed Chalabi titled The Manipulator. It's in the June 7th issue of The New Yorker magazine. She joined us from her office in Chevy Chase, Maryland. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.